This morning, we're continuing our series, Stories That Shape Us, and we're going to be talking about the story of Zacchaeus. It's a relatively short story, it's just 10 verses, but much like the title character, don't let the diminutive size of the passage fool you into missing the big message that it delivers. But before I get into the heart of the story, let me start by saying this. I really did try, but no matter how much I delved into the cultural context of the times and read from scholars about the importance of this short narrative, without fail, the dominant thought in my head while I was writing was, Zacchaeus was a wee little man. All the seminary training in the world is no match for a catchy tune. But now I've named it. I've accepted its presence in my brain, and hopefully we can move past it and dive in and see that there's much more to this story than just a Sunday school song. And we're not going to sing the song. Just, I know, it's terrible. All right. Interestingly, the story of Zacchaeus is found only in the Gospel of Luke, but it highlights three important themes that are woven throughout all of the Gospel accounts of Jesus' life. One of them is the problem of money. One of them is Jesus hanging out with sinners. And the last one is the transformative faith that leads to new life. So let's start with the problem of money. Zacchaeus was a chief tax collector. If you read about the life of Jesus, you will inevitably come across this group of people, tax collectors. And they're not often put into the category of nice people. Essentially, tax collectors were traitorous Jews who extorted money from their fellow Jews on behalf of the occupying Roman authorities. And so because of this, they were disowned by their families, and they were shunned by the entire Jewish community. And that was just your average tax collector. Zacchaeus, the vertically challenged and virtuously bankrupt toady for the Romans, was the chief tax collector, meaning that he oversaw all the other tax collectors, and so he acquired his wealth by having his underlings do the dirty work. Zacchaeus was like a first century Palestinian version of Tony Soprano, only in this version, Tony Soprano was played by Danny DeVito. So being the chief tax collector created an interesting dilemma for Zacchaeus. Because he did his dirty work through middlemen, he didn't even know who he was robbing to get rich, which made it impossible for him to repay those being taxed because he didn't know who they were. In the religious system of his people, both contrition, which is demonstrating remorse, and retribution, which is making repayment, were prerequisites for forgiveness. And so because Zacchaeus was incapable of making his retribution, he was considered unclean and severed from God. So Zacchaeus was a lost cause. There was no hope for him to be accepted by his own people or welcomed back into the community of faith. As far as the people of God were concerned, he was beyond saving. As one scholar put it, being a tax collector in Palestine in the first century meant that you possessed considerable wealth, very few friends, and absolutely no hope. So this considerable wealth that Zacchaeus had was a problem. And in fact, considerable wealth is often a problem. In the chapter right before this story, Jesus interacts with the rich young ruler and says to him the famous line, "It's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for someone who is rich to enter the kingdom of God." That's a hard truth for a lot of us to hear. The theologian N.T. Wright says, "Wherever money changes hands, whether across a grubby table in a tin shack in a dusty small town, or across a sparkling computer screen in a shiny office on the 99th floor of Wall Street, the hands all too easily get dirty." So we have Zacchaeus, this little lost cause of a man, who hears that Jesus is passing through town. And Zacchaeus wants to see him. Why in the world would a chief tax collector, who's beyond saving, want anything to do with a visiting Jewish rabbi? Why? Well, maybe it was because he'd heard that this rabbi had actually chosen a tax collector, Matthew, to be one of his disciples. What kind of rabbi would do that? Or maybe it was because Zacchaeus wanted to see if or how Matthew had changed since leaving behind his lifestyle of tax collecting. Did people really accept him? Did he lose all his money? Was he happier now than he was before? Whatever his reasons, Zacchaeus wanted to catch a glimpse of this curious rabbi. And so he climbs up in a tree beside the road, waiting for Jesus to pass by and hoping that no one sees him, since the community has nothing but disdain for him. Is the tree up there? So you got the tree. Now from atop the tree, Zacchaeus watches Jesus approach. But instead of continuing down the road, Jesus looks up at him and calls him by name. Zacchaeus, hurry down. I must stay at your house today. In the language, Jesus wasn't asking. He was saying it was of the utmost importance. It was needed that he go to the house of Zacchaeus that very day. So I suppose there's not much you can do when a traveling teacher sees you through your canopied camouflage, calls you by name, and tells you that he's coming to hang out at your house. So Zacchaeus climbs out of the tree and then welcomes Jesus gladly. He's glad because imagine what it must have been like for this man whose only friends are maybe other tax collectors, perhaps some prostitutes who he pays to spend time with him. What was it like for that man to have a popular religious leader invite himself over for dinner? How incredible must it have felt for someone as lonely and isolated as Zacchaeus to know that Jesus wanted to talk to him, to visit with him, to come into his home and relax with him, no strings attached, just because. This is where it gets good. When Jesus decides to spend time with Zacchaeus, the locals go loco. He's gone to be the guest of a sinner, they say. This rabbi is willing to go to the home of this notorious crime lord, the guy who got rich by betraying all of us, kowtowing to the evil Romans and robbing us with his unfair taxes, the guy who's unclean and severed from God and is beyond saving. Seriously? This guy? Nothing gets under the skin of religious people quite like the thought of someone welcoming in the people that they believe should be kept out. We all have our lists of who's in and who's out, and it makes us feel threatened when someone, anyone, even Jesus, comes on the scene and tells us, nope, actually building walls and guarding borders isn't the way I do things. Because that's all about fear. If you could acknowledge that you're letting fear control you, and if you could let go of that fear and trust me, Jesus, then you would see people the way I see them. You would understand that the love of God is for all people. So maybe you're thinking, well, that sounds nice and all, but where does it say that in the Bible? Well, I'm glad you asked. Throughout the gospel accounts, when we look at the way Jesus lived his life, we see that Jesus was constantly being criticized by the religious leaders of the time because of the people that he associated with. People with questionable morals, people who slept around, people who drank too much, people who stole, people who were deemed outcasts because of their choices or physical appearance or lifestyles, people who were born in different geographical areas or who practiced different cultural and religious traditions. In short, Jesus hung out with all the wrong people. Jesus' way of living and loving all kinds of people offers us an understanding of the world that overrides our default settings of self-protection that's based on fear. When we can let go of our fears and instead live and love like Jesus, we discover that we have access to unlimited resources like forgiveness, compassion, mercy, and love. The religious leaders muttered and murmured at Jesus' audacity to include people who didn't belong, to extend grace to people who didn't deserve it. But Jesus' answer to them, Jesus' own words, are simply, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. For I have come not to call the righteous, but to call sinners." So you can see how this story is deeply good news. This story is transformative. It's game-changing news. This story tells us news that can revolutionize our hearts and restore our world. That's what's happening for Zacchaeus. This man who was thought to have no hope suddenly finds hope in the presence of Jesus. In my imagination, I can see Zacchaeus growing up, desperately wanting to get taller as he sees the growth of all the boys around him. And I can imagine that the other kids his age, as kids often do, as we all do, making fun of him because he's different, making fun of him because of his short stature. They make fun of him as a way of shifting any attention away from their own differences or insecurities. It's not hard to think that Zacchaeus was teased and bullied and tormented into a kind of loneliness and isolation that leads to either depression, turning the hurt inward, or aggression, taking the hurt out on other people. And Zacchaeus chose aggression. He became a tax collector. And not only that, he became the chief tax collector, surrounded by all the money, but none of the happiness that it promised him. Estranged from his own people by his chosen profession, not welcome in the religious community, and assumed to be abandoned by God. Zacchaeus embraced this identity of power and wealth, but it was at the cost of his soul. But Jesus comes on the scene, and he knows that's not who Zacchaeus truly is. It's interesting, the name Zacchaeus actually means innocent. So at the beginning of his life, Zacchaeus' parents hoped that their son would be a living example of a pure heart. Time and circumstance led him away from his name, and his reaction to the mistreatment that he experienced was to seek safety and security in the materialistic constructs of money and power. He forgot who he was because he believed what everyone around him was saying. All the insults and the harsh words worked their way inside, and he traded his true identity for a false one. Does that sound familiar? Have you ever felt like Zacchaeus, forgotten your true identity? I'm 6'2" tall, but sometimes I feel exactly like Zacchaeus. Have there been times in your life when you've lost your way, when your immediate circumstances or the people around you convince you to believe things about yourself that are simply not true? Maybe like Zacchaeus, you've believed the lies about yourself. You've forgotten who you truly are, and now you feel like your only option is to seek out power or money or material possessions or substances or anything that seems to offer some sort of control or security or escape. Maybe you've been there. Maybe you're there right now. But that's not where you have to stay. You may feel like you're too far gone. You're past the point of no return, without hope, just like Zacchaeus. But just like Zacchaeus, hope is waiting for you in the presence of Jesus Christ. When Zacchaeus welcomed Jesus into his home, notice he didn't do anything to deserve a visit. He just climbed out of a tree and said yes. Suddenly his life looked different. The hope Jesus brought restored Zacchaeus. It reinstated him and reminded him of his true identity. This restoration was immediately made evident when, in front of the same crowd that was murmuring about Jesus' questionable taste in friends, Zacchaeus makes a public declaration of making things right, giving away half his possessions to the poor, and promising to pay back fourfold to anyone he has cheated. Interestingly, that is exactly in line with the laws in Exodus of how much you have to pay back. He had been distanced from his community, but when he came back to his community, he made it right in exactly the way that they asked him to. He put his money where his mouth is, and in the presence of Jesus, Zacchaeus is transformed. And this chief tax collector lets go of the false security of his stolen wealth and the corrupt power that he's amassed so that he can embrace the freedom found only in the love of God. And Jesus recognizes this changing. And he says, today salvation has come to this house because this man is a son of Abraham. Once shunned by the community, detached from his people and disconnected from God. But now Zacchaeus is restored again to who he truly is. He's a son of Abraham. He's one of God's chosen people. This morning I wonder what would happen if we all, you, me, all of us, began to see ourselves the way God sees us, as we truly are. And furthermore, what would happen if we began to see other people the way God sees them, for who they truly are? Maybe you already do that, but if you're anything like me, you can always get better at it. Zacchaeus was a wee little man, but in this small story, we discover a huge truth. No matter how lost you might feel, hope can always be found in the presence of Jesus. No matter how far gone someone might seem, through the love of God, no one is a lost cause. This is a story about Zacchaeus, but it's also a story about all of us. It's a story that has the potential to shape us. How can we live into this good news today? How can we join Jesus in his mission to seek and save the lost? Jesus is calling to each one of us, asking us to come out of the trees or wherever we've hidden ourselves and into his presence, because he needs to be with us today. So what do we need to let go of in order to surrender to Jesus' call, so that we can welcome him into our lives and embrace the freedom that's found in his love? When we do, we will be transformed because we will remember who we truly are, fully known, fully loved, fully alive in God. So in a little while, when we leave this place, how will we carry this good news, this story of the transformative presence of Jesus, to the people in our workplaces, our social groups, our families and friends, the people who drive us crazy, and even the people we think of as enemies? With the joy that comes from discovering our true identities in God's love, will we have the courage to reach out in that same love, welcoming others into the presence of Jesus Christ, where they will finally know who they truly are? May it be said of us, in Jesus' name.